Stop waiting for permission to start your business. Your idea is one step away, and Shopify can make it easy to make it happen. That's what we did at Crypto 101 and use Shopify to sell our book, and the rest is history. The thing I like about Shopify is it takes the scary part out of starting. You're not just sitting there trying to figure out a website, payments, checkout, inventory, all these little things that stop people before they even launch. When I think about building a storefront, the biggest thing is friction. You want someone to land on your page, like what you're selling, and be able to buy without getting stuck. That's where Shopify is huge. Shopify Checkout is built to help more customers finish their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. The cool part is Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from huge brands that you know, like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses just getting started. So whether you're building the next big brand or launching your first product, the infrastructure is already there. Once that part is handled, you can focus on the real work, building the brand, getting attention, and bringing people to your storefront so the business can grow. That moment when someone actually buys, that's when the idea becomes real. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business, so go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. That's a free trial at shopify.com/crypto101. August is a good time to clean up the closet a little bit. Get rid of the summer stuff that you didn't use, prepare for your autumn wardrobe, and upgrade the basics that you'll actually reach for every week. That's why I like Quince. They make fewer, better pieces that feel premium, but don't come with the luxury markup. For me, the piece I keep coming back to is the 100% European linen drawstring beach pants with the matching shirt. I love wearing them on beach vacations because they're easy, they're breathable, comfortable, and they look put together without feeling like I'm trying too hard. Throw them on during the day, wear them by the water, or dress up a little bit at night. That's the kind of staple I actually use because it has versatility. And that's really what Quince does well. They specialize in everyday pieces that work harder, like ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Magnolia and cashmere sweaters that can go from a casual workday to dinner out. If your basics are starting to feel worn out, Quince makes it easy to upgrade with premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the fit, structure, and quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a go-to for everything from hotel quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Guys, you've been hearing it for so long now, how I tell you, you have to go to quince.com because the website is so fun for all the options that they have. It's a great website to go click around, and the prices can't be beat. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers. Go to quince.com/crypto101. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/crypto101. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Crypto Rundown. While we continue to be in a range for Bitcoin and other cryptos, and the Fear and Greed Index continues to be in fear, there is still a lot of bullish narratives building underneath the surface. You saw the title, you saw the thumbnail. Hedge funds, according to the CME data, are going long. We're going to break that down and much, much more in this episode. What does it mean for you? What does it mean for your investing process as we continue along this range? But we see data like the CME going long, hedge funds going long on Bitcoin, BitMine, Tom Lee continuing to buy Ethereum, Bank of America coming out and giving a 4% allocation to crypto. Again, the narratives keep building underneath this stagnant flat market. Brendan, welcome back to the show. Happy Tuesday to you. How are you, my friend?
Happy Tuesday, man. Good to see everyone. Good to be here with all of you. Yeah, lots to talk about. A lot of good catalysts here. So stoked to be back. I know crypto's getting a little bit of a pullback here today and yesterday as this week is kicked off. But man, there are a bunch of good catalysts on the horizon.
Absolutely. And we'll start. You can see we have CoinMarketCap. Just a quick look at where we are. You know, again, pretty flat on the day, pretty flat across the 7 day too, for down 1% 7 day on the Coinbase 20, or sorry, the CoinMarketCap 20, Bitcoin. And then again, the fear and greed, for at least for this metric, still in fear. Quite a month for fear, extreme fear last month. So again, I think it feels like the wear you out. It's the shake you out, and now we're in the wear you out as we continue to kind of parse through the news and see what's going on. So Brendan, You put this in our team chat. I saw it online as well, and it definitely stuck out to me that hedge funds on the CME are now net long on BTC. This happened in April 25, yep. March 26, and in both instances, Bitcoin rallied 30% or more. So again, as we kind of collectively, yep. if you listen to the show consistently, we've been kind of making the case is like, okay, we got to gather the data. We got to see what's going on. But it definitely feels like as negative as the price action has been, the underlying news, the underlying momentum of the fundamentals seems to be getting more positive. And this is another data point you could add to that list.
Yeah, it is. And I think what we're seeing here, and we'll talk about this later on in the week for all the reoccurring listeners, we'll probably talk about it on Thursday in the TA segment. But I think we are seeing signs of bearish exhaustion. And again, that doesn't mean that we can't go lower. It doesn't mean price can't go down. But I think that there are at least early signs of bearish exhaustion. And what you're seeing here is that even the hedge funds over on the CME are now going long, net long Bitcoin, excuse me. And you're right. You know, this is something that we saw back in April of 2025, which was the bottom of the tariff crash. We saw it in March of 2026, which is kind of that local bottom that Bitcoin had before rallying, you know, about 30%+. And also when equities bottomed as well. And so now we're kind of back here. You have Bitcoin, which tagged the lows at the start of July, end of June, for the third time, just around that 60K area. And then you have it kind of rallying and off. And even at the time of making this, Bitcoin's still above those lows that it touched in February, May and June, and in July as well. And we're still above those levels. So now they're kind of looking at this and saying, okay, well, from October up through basically February, and then again in June and July, Bitcoin had just been going down and trending down. And now what you've seen in the last couple of months is that it's not really trending lower anymore. It is, at least since February, held on to that rough area around the low 60,000s, high 50,000s, and it really hasn't broke too convincingly deeper than that. And I think what people are doing here is they're looking at this as an area of opportunity. So that's kind of what this is saying, is that, you know, maybe there are, number one, signs of bearish exhaustion. I think that's something that you can see some early signs of. But I think on the flip side here, you're at least seeing a somewhat rare occurrence. It's not like we see this every day, every week, every month. It's like maybe you see this once or twice a year based on the historical data that we have. Maybe you see this once or twice a year where you get hedge funds that are going net long Bitcoin. So I like this here. I think that people are looking and saying, if they're going net long, in my brain, what that says is that they see limited downside risk and they see significantly more upside risk. And that's kind of the way that we're positioning over here, right? Again, could Bitcoin go lower? It absolutely could. That's something that is still on the table. We're not in this raging bull market and full of euphoria yet. You know, you still have to be careful of the downside risk, but what is that downside risk and how are people looking at it? And I think people are looking at it and saying, well, at the current prices with Bitcoin in the low 60,000s, and maybe you could add ETH to this and say ETH at 1,800, I think people are looking here and saying, okay, well, do we want to be short at a $60,000 Bitcoin, or do we want to be long? And you're seeing, at least on the CME, a lot of the hedge funds are saying, hey, with Bitcoin at 60,000, we think that we've probably juiced about as much as we could get out of it. And now we think that there's more upside risk than downside risk. And I think that's why they're kind of flipping over here. So, you know, if you are a bull, again, this is not like, oh my gosh, this is an absolute bottom sign, but I think you're getting more fuel in that argument to say, hey, is there more risk to the upside or downside? I would say that the data is starting to shift a little bit to say, hey, there's probably more upside risk when you look at those longer time horizons.
That's a great point. And I don't have much to add to that other than I can blow this up if people want a closer look at that chart. You kind of take the data points and then again, you kind of look around in the space and say, okay, well, what are the big dogs doing? Is it a fight or flight type of time? Again, when price action gets rocky, you see a lot of people obviously sell, and then there's the volatility. But what are the fundamentals? What are people saying? What are people, more importantly, what are people building? And I got a couple quick hitters here. We'll just throw out three in a row here, and then we can kind of break it down. Is Trump Media Company and Technology, obviously a little bit of a polarizing company there, but they disclosed a Bitcoin treasury of over $900 million, which that's a fair amount for a company. And then obviously the the stakeholders in that have close ties to the White House. So again, as we we've talked about on the show many times, is we're looking for some action here. If the Clarity Act's not going, what can this administration get done with crypto? And we've kind of made the case and had tons of interviews recently that the Clarity Act's not necessary. For crypto to keep moving forward, but there is things that do need to happen over the next 2 years. So, you know, again, this type of stuff when, you know, somebody's close to the White House there and their family has over 900 million in Bitcoin, you got to think maybe there'd be a push for some type of Bitcoin legislation. I think we all kind of lean towards the strategic reserve, but yet we have seen nothing and know nothing. So we can't really speculate on that or hope for that. But there's some more, I'd say, more official and more bright things on the horizon with Bank of America. Bank of America officially recommends that clients allocate up to 4% of their portfolio into Bitcoin and crypto. And then finally this week, friends of the show, Robinhood, launched crypto trading in the UK. And so you kind of take this, you know, these kind of quick hitters and you're looking around saying, okay, there's, you know, some heavy hitters investing, Robinhood. Leader in the space, continuing to build. Bank of America getting more involved, telling their own clients. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brendan, but I don't even think Bank of America necessarily has a Bitcoin product per se, like a Morgan Stanley, BlackRock. They're just saying, hey, this is a space that we're watching and it doesn't look like it's going away.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one because, again, we're seeing crypto expansion kind of across the board. And this is just another step towards that direction. I think when you want to know where the ball is heading, you have to look at things like this. And it's very clear, at least one thing has been made clear, it's that the more traditional side of finance has set up long-term infrastructure, and with that long-term bets on crypto. You see the funds that have millions, if not billions, inside of them. You see the ETFs, you see the tokenized funds, you see the overall infrastructure that they have built out. They have all these different products. They've hired all different positions. It's very clear that they are positioning for the long term, and you do not position something for the long term with billions of dollars if you are not somewhat optimistic about it, right? If you didn't think that there would be growth and return on investment, the companies that have the most money, arguably probably the most advanced talent and intelligent talent, and the people who have the most, you know, thorough insights, if they are making these decisions, it is calculated. And I'm not just talking, you know, obviously Robinhood is a big one here and the one that we're talking about, but I think it's a continuing trend here of the BlackRocks, the Fidelities, the VanEck, the Schwabs, the, you know, you name it, right? The Merrill Lynch, everyone that's getting into this stuff now or has been in this. And so Robinhood just furthering this idea that this is a process and it will continue to expand. Right? I know, and so that's what people are looking for here is how is the infrastructure being set up? And then how will it and how can it expand? And this is just the next stage in that expansion is saying, oh, you know, we can give the United Kingdom it. And then I know one of the big things that people want from Robinhood, which I'm excited about, right? You know, maybe I'm a bit biased because I'm a Robinhood bull. But the other thing is saying, hey, when can we get a lot of these tokenized stocks and when can we get a lot of these new features inside the United States? And so that market isn't even open up yet to some of these different asset categories as they relate to crypto. And so there's a lot of stuff on the horizon. If you think that we have, you know, reached maximum reach or maximum availability of all these different products, you're very wrong. I mean, there's so much more that can come and it's an ever-growing process. So we love to see it.
You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always the headcount budget or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves and suddenly everybody's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform trusted by 94% of the Fortune 500. It captures workflows as they happen and turns them into step-by-step documentation your team can review and share. You just do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot automatically. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. Scribe doesn't just document workflows. It uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps and opportunities to simplify or automate. To see what Scribe could look like for your org, head to scribe.how/crypto101 and mention Crypto 101 for your first month of Scribe Capture free on select plans. That's Scribe, scribe.how/crypto101. Everybody is talking about AI right now, but the AI that actually matters is the kind that saves you time, helps you make smarter decisions, and takes work off your plate. And if you're running an e-commerce business, shipping is one of those things that can either keep you moving or completely slow you down. That's why I like ShipStation. It's an end-to-end order fulfillment platform built for e-commerce businesses, and its AI is trained on decades of real shipping data from billions of shipments across the world. So instead of juggling a bunch of different tools, ShipStation helps you stay in control. It can alert you when your stock is low, recommend the best carrier selections and rates, automate tasks, and help you save time as you grow. You also get inventory syncing across sales channels, automatic rate shopping, a branded returns portal, and integrations with accounting and CRM software, all in one place. If I were running an e-commerce store, this is exactly the kind of tool I'd want, because once the orders start coming in, you don't want shipping to be the thing that's holding you back. Over 1 million businesses have trusted ShipStation to optimize and scale their shipping. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code crypto. That's ShipStation.com, code crypto. ShipStation.com, code crypto. Taxes and fees apply. I don't know about you, but dinner sneaks up on me all the time. I'll open the fridge and realize I have no protein ready. And at that point, I'm not trying to go to the store, make a last-minute grocery run, and gamble on whatever meats or burgers are left at the store. That's why Omaha Steaks is a great freezer move. It's like having a trusted butcher at home and quality protein when you need it the most. Omaha Steaks has earned its reputation with over 100 years. It's the same beef trusted in kitchens across the country, shipped straight to your door. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, but it didn't, just minutes. And if you never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect place to start. You get 20 premium steak burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak, 4 filet mignon burgers, 4 New York strip burgers, 4 ribeye burgers, 4 brisket burgers, and 4 sirloin burgers. Guys, this is the altcoin basket of burgers right here. If me and Brian were on the rundown, we would be divvying these up 50-50 because you know how we like to grill in the summer. So you're not just getting a box of burgers, you're getting different flavor profiles, different textures, and real steakhouse style variety you can throw on the grill or cook up fast during the week. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with the promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and then I saw something about the Bank of Russia approving Bitcoin.
I saw a little bit about that.
Yeah, yeah, Bitcoin. So the Bank of Russia approves trading of Bitcoin, Ethereum, and USDT, but not XRP. We know the XRP army is not going to be happy about that. Maybe more to come. But the Russia Central Bank proposed the first time in its framework letting ordinary investors trade crypto on public markets. This is definitely new because I know we've covered on the show in years past of how, you know, Russia and China and a lot of other countries didn't want their people participating in these type of markets, trying to figure out, you know, how to kind of guardrail it, especially in some of the more communist countries. But again, it moves forward. So again, I don't think this is a huge necessarily liquidity catalyst in my mind, but it shows you where this is all leading to adoption, you know, around the world as we continue to see that grow and go.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, man. Again, it fits into the exact theme we were just talking about. Like, this stuff will expand. Crypto as an industry, I think it is in the process of expanding. And, you know, listen, if it can penetrate into, you know, something like Russian and they're willing to do stuff like this, like, I continue to think that it's going global. I was talking to a younger guy, younger investor, I don't know, probably a week or two ago, and he actually wasn't too familiar or into crypto. It's not like he was negative about it, but he just wasn't like really in the space. And he does more like traditional investing. And he's like, you really like think that this stuff's going to continue to grow? Like, you think it's going to be able to like have a comeback and like do all these things? I was like, absolutely. Like, that's my belief and time will tell. But I think that this is very telling of that bigger picture, right? It's hard to see stuff like that happen and not think that there's going to be some sort of implications in the future. We go through periods where there's ups and downs, there's peaks and troughs. And, you know, historically speaking, crypto's kind of always come out of that. And I think there's the biggest disconnect that we have seen, maybe the biggest disconnect that we have seen in crypto's history. You know, I first did reports on crypto back in like when I was in high school, TiVo. I mean, it was like 2012 or something like that. And I did reports on Bitcoin then. And then I started doing, you know, crypto stuff, you know, on a consistent basis back in like 2017. So almost a decade ago. And I think that throughout all of this, this might be the most disconnected that the crypto market has ever been, because you have this insane amount of infrastructure that's being built. You have a wild amount of adoption and backing from the most, you know, large and powerful places on the planet. And yet, despite that, you have crypto as an underperforming asset class, despite it putting up probably some of the most impressive feats that people would have, you know, never seen coming, I think, prior to this. And so that's where I stand. I think that the infrastructure and the positioning here has been wild. And I don't think that that's something that's been priced in yet. So again, my opinion, not financial advice, but I think that there's a large disconnect between the way that the big money, smart money, giant whale investors and institutions are positioning themselves. And then there's a disconnect between all of them and how crypto is being currently priced and anticipated as kind of its role in the future. So I'm excited. That kind of thing excites me. And I know people get frustrated and they get bored, but at least for me, I find it exciting.
Yeah, I think when you add in the the intersection of crypto and AI, the narrative that's been building, you could make that case. And I know our team and Bryce agrees with you because, again, the biggest buying opportunity right now before crypto's next big move webinar that Bryce has been working on for a while airs or is going live. It's a live webinar this Thursday. You want to make sure that you sign up for that before 11 a.m. PST on Thursday. So we have a link below. If anybody's interested in tuning in and listening to Bryce live, check it out. We put the link there in the description. The webinar is going to, you know, cover the convergence of AI and crypto. And kind of like Brendan said, it's like, hey, the disconnect is here. And we're going to kind of lay out that case. And it's more of a deep dive. So if you like the podcast and like Bryce, you're going to want to check that out. It's a full deep dive with him live on Thursday. Check the link below. You can sign up for that. It is completely free. As we move on the rundown, we want to say hi to everybody in the chat. We've got Liverpool, Atom, A-T-O-M from Liverpool. YOLO's here out in SoCal. I was in SoCal at the OC Fair this week. Super fun time. Anybody else in the chat, let us know where you're listening in from. We always appreciate everybody tuning in.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday. It's another day. And as the days go by, we always know that Tom Lee continues to buy ETH, just buying some more. 58 straight weeks of ETH purchases. And then they also have their preferred stock out. We know that, the drama around MicroStrategy and Sailor and their preferred stock of selling Bitcoin and buying their own preferred stock to try to get it back to par. Haven't heard any negative things from the preferred Bitmine stock yet, but Tom Lee just continuing to buy ETH.
Yeah. This is how I feel like it should be for treasury companies. They should be continually buying ETH. And especially when the market's down, TiVo, when the market's down 50, 60%, 40%, I don't care. If the market is down 40 to 60%, maybe more, maybe even less than that, a treasury company should be buying low, and I'm actually okay with the idea of them selling higher. What I don't like, and I've been outspoken about this, I'm not going to go into a full rant today, but you should not be selling low and trying to buy high. It just does not, I mean, I'm okay with buying high, don't get me wrong, but you shouldn't be selling low. It defeats the point of a treasury company. So I really like this out of Tom Lee and Bitmine, where they're saying, hey, we're going to dollar cost average. We have the thesis, we've talked about it, we believe in it, we see the data, we see the vision, we're going to buy. We're going to buy every single week. It's been over a year now, and they're still buying every week. Now, sometimes it's larger, sometimes it's smaller. That's normal. That happens. But I like this here. And so, again, 58 straight weeks of purchases. It's a great thing to see. And, you know, I think that that's kind of the mindset that you need to have if you're a treasury company, right? Lead by example. And so I really like this.
I really like it. Yeah, I love it. Tom Lee just sticking with the program, as they say. You brought something this show for stablecoins. Seeing a lot of spending volumes on stablecoins. I'll let you break that down.
Yeah. This is an interesting one because stablecoin growth as a whole has been another just parabolic sector. I mean, stablecoins continue to grow. They continue to hit records. They are doing and performing exceptionally. And, you know, one of the ways that we can track this is through stablecoin card spending, right? And the volumes that come with those. And this thing surged another 16% in July to a record $1.03 billion. What this report says is that, you know, this marks 200% year-over-year volume growth with over 10 million purchases made in July alone, which is a wild thing to see. You're seeing this being accessed in 60 plus different countries with a 68% volume coming from non-US based users, which is also a really interesting thing. When you think of card spending, I think the average person, probably their brain goes to the US and say, oh, you know, us Americans, we are those card spenders. We take on the debt. But no, what you're seeing here is that actually almost, you know, 70% is coming from overseas, which tells me that there's still a huge addressable market to tap into within the United States, and you're yet to tap into that. And there's a huge amount of, you know, overseas adoption coming out of this stuff. So yeah, I mean, if you're looking at this, you got to be bullish. Again, adoption growing, you're seeing this grow. It's why we call it a builder's market, right? The bear markets are builder's markets. And I think if you continue to see this stuff grow, I mean, how many weeks is this going to uptrend for before people try to price in this kind of information, right? You got to look at like what kind of infrastructure is this being built on? And then how is it going to impact that infrastructure? If you were to see a company, and I know this isn't a perfect comparison, TiVo, so, you know, bear with me, everyone in the audience, but to strawman this, if you were to see a company that had a subsector that was just exploding within it, or they're an infrastructure company, right? And there's a company that desperately needs you and uses you, and you're the infrastructure that runs their company, and they're growing every single month at a 200% year-over-year growth, that comes back to you, right? If they are growing, that comes back to the infrastructure provider. And again, I just don't think that people are paying attention to this enough. It's rare to see this have 200% year-over-year growth and then the underlying infrastructure player or provider be completely unaffected and go the opposite direction. I only see a world where that can happen for so long, right? If you have this number from August of 2025 be 380 million and now all of a sudden it's over, you know, a billion, right? And it's growing hundreds of percent from by hundreds of millions of dollars. How does that not affect the underlying infrastructure at some point in the future? I think that it will. Again, does it have to happen instantly? No. But I do think at some point you see a catch up here. I only think that you can see so much growth without the things that it correlates to being affected.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I've kind of just in my investing thesis as a whole, you know, we were early to Robinhood and love the Robinhood team, and appreciate them always coming on the pod for the years. Yep. And I know me and you kind of were, made that call like under $10 to see where it is now. But with stable coins and crypto and this convergence of crypto and AI, it's like, okay, well, what's the future of banks? What's the future of money? What's the future of technology? And it feels like there could be a race of trying to figure out, you know, what type of company, what type of product can kind of encapsulate stable coins and finance and bring it into the new age. And that's, you know, are the summary of an investing thesis that I'm trying to research into is what's the next big tech company, and could it be a financial firm in a way where, you know, if you lag behind, you know, the vanguards of the world, and we've seen the innovation that, you know, BlackRock and Morgan Stanley are doing, and Vanguard was late to the party and offering the Bitcoin ETF, and now Aseem come to the party. But you could think of it the same way of offering, you know, agentic trading and use of stable coins and kind of uplifting the system of what it used to be, where you just, you know, your paycheck goes to the bank and then they fractionally lend it and make all the money, and you get, you know, you get nothing, basically next to nothing. You know, these type of products, I think, offer a huge opportunity for, you know, both investors, everyday people, and, you know, the quote unquote banks themselves. So these are the type of stats that get me excited, because where there's this type of growth, there's going to be tons of new products around it. And if they're done right, I think you're going to maybe, you know, my thought would be maybe in 10, 20 years, you're going to see a whole new swath of mega banks, but they're basically going to be technology companies. Am I crazy, Brendan, or do you agree?
No, I agree. I don't think you're crazy at all. Now, the exciting part is how it plays out and watching it play out, but time will tell, man. And, you know, if there's any time to position, I think people are trying to time it perfectly, but it's quite hard to do that. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't time it perfectly because there's a lot of noise. And then, you know, we're just talking 20 years down the line, but let's zoom it in for, let's just go the rest of this year. And a huge topic is rate cuts. And we kind of came into the year, you're thinking new Fed president of the United States is going to pick. He's going to be friendly to the administration. He's going to come in and cut rates, as we projected on the show. That's not how it works. There's a, you know, a governing board that votes. They're kind of, you know, basically saying they're going to be data dependent. And then it's flipped. All this data's come in of like, okay, the war, inflation's high, oil inflation, and we gotta raise rates. And it's that pendulum of rate cuts this year. Then at one point we're seeing projection of two rate hikes. And my thought all along was it's probably going to end up in the middle. With maybe one or none. And so there's been all this talk about rate hikes, but then there's more data coming out of this jobs number. These jobs numbers can keep getting revised down. And we saw this years ago before the last election. Like, some of these job numbers got revised down by a ton. You know, 66,000 here, 43,000, 23,000 revised down. And if this is the case, and you pull up the chart here and you're seeing, you know, negative growth, one, you know, rip a positive, but then again, negative. It's like, this isn't an environment where, in my opinion, part of the mandate of the Fed is employment. If you're seeing this, you're not going to go raise rates, in my opinion. And so I don't understand. There's some firms coming out projecting interest rate hikes. I don't necessarily see it again. I'm no interest rate expert. It's just something I like to look into.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do you think when you see this data?
No, you're 100% right. I think the idea, and this is not a political stance at all, everyone. So, but I think the idea of rate hikes is ludicrous. At least multiple rate hikes right now. It is wild. Maybe we get one. It's a possibility, right? But I just think that this whole idea is low. Especially when you have oil, right? Everyone's saying, oh, well, it's because of oil and it's because of other things. Like, guys, inflation lately has not been that bad. I don't care how you look at it. If you look at it on Trueflation, it's really not that bad. If you look at it based off of the numbers that has been coming out in some of these CPI and PPI reports, it's not as crazy as it's being talked about. And when you see it be somewhat underwhelming, and when you see energy like oil down 30% from its highs, from $120 back down to almost $80 flat, I mean, you know, I'm not sure what we're going to say here, especially when you share this kind of a report, TiVo, where the jobs data kind of speaks for itself. I don't know. It makes me wonder. I have wondered this. I don't know what's going through some of the analyst heads on Wall Street. Maybe it's tactical, actually. Now that I think about it, maybe it's tactical on their end to get the market to go the way that they want. I don't think a lot of people truly believe that we're going to see multiple rate hikes. I saw some of the banks putting out saying that we're going to see three or four. I just don't know how you get to that point. So I'm not going to get too into it, but I agree with you. And the reason why I think this matters is because there seems to be this narrative that there's this extremely strong argument for hikes. I don't think there is. I think there is a argument. I don't think it's extremely strong. I don't think we see multiple hikes this year. I don't think, at least not with the data we have right now, I don't think we see multiple hikes next year either. Now, again, the world can change, so time will tell. But I agree with you. And if this is the case for cuts, then obviously that would be net positive for Bitcoin. Cuts typically cause a more risk-on environment. The more risk-on the markets are, historically, Bitcoin tends to perform pretty well in a rate-cutting environment, at least when we're expecting cuts. So it's an important data point to track, and I actually really like this chart, TiVo, because while I have been watching this data come out every month, I haven't seen all of it put side by side with like the last 5 years of data, just basically showing that, you know, hey, there's not a ton of fuel to kind of back this, or at least it's not an easy argument, right? I think that that's the way that people act, is that like on both ends, like, oh, it should absolutely be a cut, it's so obvious. And then, you know, you have people on the opposite end being like, oh, it should absolutely be a hike, it's so obvious. I don't think it's so black and white in either direction. And so because of that, I think there's going to be a more neutral stance. And, you know, time will tell. But yeah, I think the idea of multiple hikes is, in my opinion, off the table. So, and you've also seen those odds coming down on prediction markets and the Fed Watch tool and other things as well. So it's not like I just have this opinion that they're coming down. They are, and they have been coming down a little bit.
Yeah, another piece of data is the housing market. There's over 1.1 million homes for sales in the U.S., the highest inventory since 2009. So then the law of supply and demand, if there's more supply than demand, the prices need to adjust, which, you know, would mean that housing prices should come down. Now, I think there's a lot of like the buyers, there's a lot of buyers that necessarily don't want to sell. There's a lot of people with multiple homes that can afford it. But then there's the people that are locked into their COVID interest rates, right? They're basically, you know, got the lowest rates in a lifetime during the COVID years on a house. But that means you're stuck. So if you want to upgrade for a house and you're a young family and you got this amazing rate at, you know, whatever it is, 3% on your starter home, you have the money and you've been successful and you've saved and you have a lot of equity in your home. And you want to upgrade, you're eyeing that, you know, I'm just throwing out a number. Like, let's say you have the $300,000, $400,000 home, you're eyeing the $800,000 home or the $1 million home, and you have all this equity in your house and you've saved because you had the low payment. Well, to get that equity out of your house, you have two options. You have to sell for your family at the new interest rates that people don't want to do, or you got to refinance. And when you refinance, you take the new interest rate. So You have all this equity in your home, but it's stuck. And so I feel like there's a lot of stubborn, you know, sellers / buyers if you're looking to move to a new home. So it'll be interesting to see if that starts to move and that market starts to adjust.
Yeah,
and that could be another, you know, bringing inflation down as if housing prices come down.
Yeah.
One more thing before we wrap up our Tuesday rundown. I just thought this was really cool. It's the Bulls versus the Bears. It's always a battlefield out there, Brendan. And there was somebody coded a website that shows the
Bitcoin
price as a battlefield.
Yeah.
What do you think? Hopefully the Bulls take it over the battlefield there in the months to come.
I saw this. I think yesterday or over the weekend I saw this. Such a brilliant idea. I love this. This is fun because it's, I don't know, kind of gamifies it in a little bit. You can see the orders coming in. Just the way that they coded this and kind of visualized it is so smart. And it made me think, like, why haven't we done this before? Brilliant idea. I love to see it. What was this website called again, TiVo? Do we have a... I saw videos of it, but I couldn't find what the actual website was.
You know, I just saw it as a tweet.
The reactions have me cracking up. I'm sure
you have to give it a Google or check it out for yourself, but either way, a good idea, a great idea, and a fun interactive UI. It'll be fun to see it when there's big rallies, and then, you know, obviously not as fun when there's a big drawdown, but it'll just be interesting to see on days where there, you know, there's a lot of buying or a lot of selling. You turn on this website, see what's going on. It could be a fun visual.
On days where it's just absolutely soaring or tanking, there's a problem. I would think it would be cool if there was like just crazy new things. There's like missiles flying and helicopters coming in.
Helicopters and airstrike comes in. That'd be great.
Yeah, like airstrikes, and you're like, oh my gosh. Like, there's a lot of opportunity in an idea like this. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, we want to thank thanks to you for tuning in or coming on, Brendan. We really appreciate it. Thanks to everybody who tuned in. We had another international rundown. We had one person from Liverpool and a bunch of other people in the chat. We always appreciate it. Give this video a thumbs up, bottom right, if you're new, subscribe. If you're listening via the replay, make sure you come on to Crypto 101 and subscribe and turn on the bell notifications if you want to see you know, me, Brendan, Brian, Joe, Hunter, when we do this, we do it live. So if you want to be a part of the live, join us on YouTube. But that's all for now. We're going to talk to you later this week. We've got some more great interviews. We'll do another rundown on Friday. So we'll see you then. But that's all for now. Bye-bye, everybody.